Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world. And welcome to this week's edition of Interop Radio, where we'll be talking about management lessons from Homeland Security. Yes, really, management lessons from Homeland Security. My name is Susan Nunziata, and I'm Community Editor with Information Week. And I'm here subbing in for our usual host, Curtis Franklin Jr., who is off on assignment in chilly Las Vegas at the Consumer Electronics Show. We'll be hearing more from Kurt on that next week, I'm sure. But meanwhile, I'm happy to bring you some exciting information from, yes, the Department of Homeland Security. Kurt sat down some time ago at the Black Hat Conference in September with Kevin Green. Kevin is Program Manager for Software Assurance at the Cybersecurity Division of the Science and Technology Directorate in the Department of Homeland Security. And Green talked with Kurt about the role of software assurance at DHS, how assurance is built into the software that's created and deployed by the department, as well as the lessons that enterprise software project managers of every stripe can learn from the work that's going on in our government department and agencies. And this show is brought to you by Interop, which is our annual conference in Las Vegas. It's being held this year, April 27th through May 1st at the Mandalay Bay Convention Center in Las Vegas. And if you visit our chat room, you can find more information and details, or you can go to interop.com. There'll be an entire track devoted to information security that I think will be of particular interest to those of you who are joining us for today's show. And we really look forward to engaging with you in the chat as well. And so we hope that you'll join us there as we play this this interesting and fascinating and really outstanding interview that Kurt was able to do with Kevin Green. We look forward to hearing what you have to say about software and about how its quality can be assured, you know, with proper policies and procedures. So without further ado, here we have Kevin and Kurt.
I'm sitting down with Kevin Green, Program Manager, Software Assurance, in the Cybersecurity Division of the Department of Homeland Security. Kevin, welcome to Dark Reading Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, I think for a lot of people, the notion of where cybersecurity enters into Homeland Security is an interesting question. So can you tell me first, I know your business card says the Software Assurance Program. So can you tell me what it is that you work with in Homeland Security?
So I'm from the Science and Technology Directorate. So part of what I do is part of the Cybersecurity Division at Department of Homeland Security Science and Technology Directorate is, you know, specifically for my program is we recognize that software is ubiquitous, right? Software is everywhere. Software is in cars, software in medical devices, software is in our daily lives in terms of home appliances, mobile devices. But more importantly, software powers our critical infrastructure. So in terms of DHS, our job is really to protect the Homeland Security enterprise, federal, state, and local, as well as industry, right? Those organizations that are responsible for critical infrastructure. So software becomes a big part of that, right? Software, you know, as I mentioned, is ubiquitous. So we recognize the need to create better software, better quality of software. So that's where DHS, at least from the Science and Technology Cybersecurity Division, that's our role in trying to protect this nation.
Okay, so when you say better software, I assume what you mean is software with fewer security vulnerabilities. It's not your job to make sure that the colors on the user interface don't make your eyes bleed. You're more interested in making sure that those back-end holes don't exist.
Right, so let me clarify something. So I'm responsible for research and development as it relates to creating better techniques in terms of how we analyze software for weaknesses, right? Trying to push forward the state of the art and try to, you know, create improvements and introduce some innovation in that area so that we have some confidence that software can be trusted. So you're right. part of what I do and one of fun, you know, in terms of research I find is creating better ways to analyze software, but also improve the tools that are used to analyze software. Some studies have shown that software developers will be more likely to adopt some type of software quality assurance tool early in the software development lifecycle if the tool performed well. In terms of when I say perform well, a lot of times tools produce a lot of false positives. Sometimes the tool does not detect things that it should detect. We consider that false negatives or the soundness of a tool. So as a software developer uses a tool, if a tool generates a lot of false positives, a lot of alarms, that tool becomes useless to a software developer. It creates more cycles, more time. So I've always operated from the notion that if we create better performing tools, we have a better chance of having a software developer adopt it early in the software development lifecycle so that he or she can detect bugs, weaknesses in software before it leaves their desktop. So the studies also suggest that the cost to fix a weakness or a vulnerability significantly increases as it moves through the software development lifecycle. So I'm proud of, you know, the program that, you know, I'm the program manager of, because we're trying to improve the tools and create better performing tools so that we can get it in the hands of the developers so they can use them early and often.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about the use of the tools by developers. I know that there exists some development methodologies that say that the people who should be testing the software are software testers, a dedicated team that comes in at the end. And yet, with some of the newer methodologies, Agile and DevOps, I hear people talking about, as you say, the developers being much more involved in the testing of their code before it ever hits a point of being a fully finished product. Do you find that you're talking more to the developers on the front end rather than simply the dedicated testing teams, or is that something that is still in an evolution?
Well, one of the things to consider is when testing software, the person who knows how software should be tested is the person who developed the software. So a lot of times it makes sense for the software developer, as they're writing code, to have a place where they can test their software for weaknesses. And when I mean test, I mean somewhat baked security in, make sure baked security is baked in, and make sure that security is addressed at the early phases of the software development lifecycle. Now, as we move through the software development lifecycle, there are gates, I would say, where, you know, the DevOps kind of can meet. You know, there's some QA gates as well. There are tools as well that should be used to test software as well for security weaknesses that can lead to vulnerabilities that gives an adversary potentially, you know, an attack vector to really compromise systems. So I think, you know, yes, we want to focus on the developer because yes, the developer understands how the code is written, how the code is supposed to, you know, the functionality behind the code. But also, you know, we want to be able to make sure that the tools can cover the entire life cycle of the software development process.
Now, when you talk about Department of Homeland Security and software assurance, is most of your focus on the software that is used by the department, or is your focus on software that is used by industry as well? Is it a broader focus?
It's a broader focus, and part of the reason is the proliferation of open source software, right? So open source software has been used throughout the federal government, is being used in industry. So one of the key things is how can we raise the bar and the quality of open source software? Because obviously, when we start talking about the software supply chain, a lot of the open source software is being used in critical infrastructure. It's being used in the federal government. It's being used in banking and financing. So, we really want to, focus on how do we raise the bar and create better quality software. I think that's the end goal of what the program is designed to do. And one way to do that is to really, you know, create some innovation around software quality assurance tools, because it gives the end user some ways to really validate whether or not the software meets specific requirements, make sure that certain weaknesses that are known to create vulnerabilities are not present in software?
You know, when we talk about software, for the longest time, when we think about software, we think about stuff that runs on today laptops or, you know, client computers, as well as stuff that runs back on the servers. But I know one of the things that's being talked about a lot here at Black Hat this year is software that runs on things, whether they are cars or thermostats or little gewgaws, doodads, widgets, whatever they may be, the whole Internet of Things. Is that on your radar screen at this point? Or are you trying to work on ways to figure out how to make the software that runs the things more secure, or is it still a little bit early for that?
I think, you know, that's a very interesting question. And I think, you know, what we try to do, we try to look forward as well as address issues today. And part of it is being able to have visibility into those things that are being used a lot. Some of the new buzzwords of Internet of Things. So those research concepts and ideas are something that, you know, we're currently looking at and trying to figure out how best to address those specific issues, how to make the intersections with existing projects we have to create better synergies, right, across our entire portfolio of projects that we have. So, yes, we are constantly looking at some of the emerging concepts, some of the emerging technologies that exist, and the Internet of Things is one of those things that exists. So within CSD, there are different programs. I mean, different programs for different project managers. So my project focus is really on software assurance, but there are other projects as well. So yes, I would say yes. We are currently looking at, you know, the whole gamut for figuring out what's the best way to approach this problem and what's the best way to address this problem.
When we think about security and vulnerabilities, it seems like these days we're hearing about two broad topics. One is those external actors who are going to try to get into a particular piece of software without authorization and do something they shouldn't do. The other is people who have authorization but want to use software in a way that the people writing it and managing it didn't intend. You know, people getting access to information that they're not supposed to, by even though they are a legitimate user of the application. When you are looking at trying to increase the quality of software, do you find that you think of one of these problems more than the other? Is the internal, if you will, actor a different problem than the external actor, or is it all one big issue in terms of making the software less vulnerable?
I think there are different motivations for wanting to exploit vulnerabilities, right? Weaknesses in software. There's different motivations. From where I look at it, from my program view, you know, a weakness is a weakness. And depending on what that weakness is, that weakness can expose or create, you know, an attack surface that can be exploited by an adversary, by someone who wants to compromise or steal sensitive information. And a lot of times, some are intentional. Sometimes they are unintentional. But at the end of the day, you know, when we develop the program, we don't necessarily take what is the motivation that a person may use. We just want to say, okay, we want to create better software, and if we can create better ways to assess and test software so we find those weaknesses in software so that the developer can address them early and often and fix them, then, you know, we're doing our job. So by the time software is deployed and brought into the production system environment, the attack surface has decreased. So that's ultimately what we want to accomplish through the program, and I think, you know, the motivation is going to be always there for different actors, of course, right? But at the end of the day, we really want to make sure, you know, we can really have some assurances that the software that is part of our environment that's on the internet can be trusted.
Kevin, people like you and your group and others around the industry are working to make the software more resistant to exploit, more secure, better in every way. And yet there are an awful lot of organizations that don't take advantage of any of these methods for making the software better. When you hear someone talk about why they're not, what motivation do they give? I mean, from what you see, why aren't all organizations just, you know, racing to embrace the new and better methodologies for making more secure software?
So I think there's a lot of interesting things that I can pull from my experience in working in different environments and wearing different hats. I think for the most part, you know, software has always been, you know, kind of left in a corner on its own. And we really have focused mostly on the network. And because the network is somewhat disappearing, kind of, you know, dissolving because it's in the cloud and so many different changes to the network infrastructure, now we see software issues come to the forefront a little bit as we look at some of the most recent attacks, or some of the, you know, in particular Heartbleed, and Heartbleed has kind of brought a lot of things to the forefront in terms of software quality or software security, I should say. I think policies as well that are used not only in the federal government but also in industry really focus on network. And I think a lot of times when we build situational awareness within an environment, we have to find a way to add application security context to that. So we have a broader view of not only risk within the environment, but where are our vulnerabilities? Where are attack vectors that can be used to exploit systems? It's not just the network. It's the application, because at the end of the day, if I'm doing business, I'm banking online, chances are I need to have port 443 available, open to the internet, so someone can have a secure session in to do banking. However, but, you know, that gives a potential adversary access to your web server, and they can launch potential attacks through 443 and port 80. So, you know, I think because of what we're seeing in the environment, what we're seeing in the industry, what we're seeing across the global world, there is a heightened level of urgency to really address software security. Another thing is to consider is that we have traditionally used economics as a way to not do something. And I'm not just talking just from my prior experiences. So to formalize a software assurance program, a lot of times, you know, it can cost a lot of money. The tools are expensive. The tools don't always perform the way they intended. So a lot of times people, you know, kind of misplace the emphasis on what is a priority. And a lot of times software assurance, software security has not been a priority. If you just look at it from a software development standpoint, the need to bake security in at the early phases of software development lifecycle has always kind of been neglected. So now people are understanding the need to not only write secure code, but design it right. And while, you know, that exists within corporations, one of the things we have to address fundamentally is you know, students and youngsters at very early ages and introduce some type of secure coding in schools, right, to teach, you know, kids and students how to not only develop software but develop securely. I think that's one of the fundamental things that we were missing from an academia standpoint is we teach kids how to develop software, but we don't teach them how to develop securely, nor do we teach them how to design software securely. So I think those issues are some of the common issues that say, well, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that. But I think, you know, if we can lower the bar in terms of creating better tools that we can give to folks, right, so they can help formalize some aspects of software assurance, I think we'd be a better place. And I think at the end of the day, secure coding is our first line of defense, right? It's becoming our first line of defense because, you know, poorly written software can create, you know, a lot of vulnerabilities that can be exploited and ultimately, you know, end up bad situation and end up on the front page of newspapers and create a lot of, actually put the community at risk, so.
With your emphasis on the software, I talk to people who have an emphasis on the security of the network. Some people who look at the security of the authentication and authorization process for users and devices. If you're trying to say all of these go into making an entirely secure data processing infrastructure, is it possible to say that one is more important than the other? How important in that matrix is the software? Is it a case where you can have the most secure software in the world, but if the network people have fallen down on their jobs, then it's not going to work? How do you look at the total picture? I know you focus on the software assurance, but how do you look at that in terms of the total information processing security picture?
So at the end of the day, one of the things that, I think is important is to understand what's important to you in an organization. What am I trying to protect? So for a lot of organizations, data, protecting data is very important. It's a high priority. So, where does data reside on the network? All right. Obviously, there's hooks into many different components within the infrastructure, but software plays a key role in that, right? But also, the network plays a key role as well. So I think, having an understanding on where the data is and developing good strategy on how to protect the data, I think that would provide organizations a good fundamental strategy of, where should I put my prioritizations in terms of developing a comprehensive strategy, something that includes some what has been deemed a buzzword, defense in depth, layered security. I think understanding where your data is, how to protect it, where data moves throughout the network, and having the right controls in place. So data at rest requires a separate set of controls. As data moves throughout the network, it requires the network. It relies on the network to protect it and somewhat safeguard it. So I think it depends on where data is and how it moves throughout the network and what type of data you're trying to protect.
Okay, Kevin, you've been very generous with your time here at Black Cat, and we appreciate it. I've got one more question, though. If someone has heard the interview we've done here and says, this sounds like they're doing great work, how do they engage with what Homeland Security is doing to try and take some of the lessons and processes and technologies and techniques that you're developing and incorporate it into their own work? Is there a formal way? Are there informal ways? How does that happen?
So one of the things, we're always looking for transition partners. So as we develop and innovate and create technologies, we look for transition partners, place where we can go in and try to operationalize the technologies. We're always looking for folks to demo and pilot the technologies or products we have. So I think one of the things that is key is understanding that, hey, we want to be able to transition this to the community so the broader community can benefit from the improvements we've made on a particular technology set. So, if someone's interested in understanding or have an idea of some of the things I have in my portfolio in terms of software quality assurance, they can definitely contact me. and get more information about it. I'm not sure how to convey that information, my contact information, but they can definitely contact me and learn more about some of the things that I'm doing. We're always interested in understanding what are some of the struggles that industry is facing with, right? And, you know, a lot of what I do is outreach, working with different organizations, trying to understand where some of the pain points are, because you never know, that can potentially translate into research topics that can be funded and close some of the gaps that exist in some of the state-of-the-art technologies that we use today.
Outstanding. Well, if you're interested, we can certainly put ways to get in touch with you in the show notes for this interview, and encourage people to reach out to you if they're interested in trying to take advantage of what you're doing and put it into practice. Well, I've been sitting here with Kevin Green, Program Manager for Software Assurance with the Cybersecurity Division of the Department of Homeland Security. Kevin, once again, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
I appreciate it, and I appreciate the time, and hopefully, you know, we can all do our job in helping protect this nation.
Well, I'd say that I'm sold on Kevin and the work that he is doing, and I thank you all for listening in on Kurt Franklin's excellent interview with Kevin Green from the Department of Homeland Security. Definitely reassuring there. And Kevin touched upon many topics that are going to be talked about at the upcoming Interop 2015, which is taking place April 27th through May 1st at the Mandalay Bay Convention Center in Las Vegas. What particularly struck me was how Kevin was talking about the changes to the network, and as the network dissolves and morphs into a much more fluid environment, the importance of software assurance coming to the forefront in organizations, and just the overall complexity in today's environment of ensuring security across all of the endpoints, across all of the potential data points and touch points that bad actors can get into. And these are going to be topics that you'll have a chance to talk with network engineers and IT executives and business leaders at Interop 2015. So I do encourage you to visit interop.com, check out the agenda, and consider joining us there to talk more about these topics. My name is Susan Nunziata. I'm subbing in for Curtis Franklin Jr. for today's show, and I want to thank you all for joining us. We look forward to seeing you next week at Interop Radio.